time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames Hockey Talk.
Camp opens today. It's time to start another quest for the Stanley Cup. Hey, time for Flames Unfiltered. Episode 134 as we fire off season 4 of the show. And let's start it off right away welcoming our new co-host of the show, Kyle Lewis. Welcome to the show.
Thank you much for the invite, for having me as a co-host. I've been looking forward to this for quite a while now, all summer.
Yeah, actually, we've been working on it all summer. As Kyle was a guest on the show,
Yeah, I think maybe 4 times, something like that.
Yeah, so we had a lot of discussion over the summer and developed a game plan to work on this project together as we cruise into season 4. These first 3 seasons of the show went by so fast, and I've had a real, real good time talking Flames hockey with all of the listeners out there, and hopefully now we'll even expand our listening pool with having Kyle on. A lot of good Flames debate ahead for this season. Is this is going to be a crazy wild year, as it looked doom and gloom, and a few trades and a few signings and a few this and that's, and everybody's talking Calgary as a Stanley Cup contender. It's going to be an exciting year. It is. It's crazy to think that. I mean, could you imagine how different this show would sound had it been no Huberdeau, no Uyghur, no Kadri? Could you imagine how different this show would
sound? No hope.
I know, you're right. It would have been no hope. But,
I've been watching hockey a long time. I've never seen a team turn around that quickly, pivot that quickly from looks like they have to rebuild to they have a legit chance at making a Stanley Cup run.
Crazy how quick things turn. As training camp actually opened up today as we were recording this on a Wednesday evening. Physicals today. Some meet and greet with the press, a little bit of talk going on, and some news we're going to talk about here later on in the show that came out today. And tomorrow they hit the ice early in the morning in Calgary. I think it's 8:30 in the morning. They have 3 groups this year. There's 61 skaters in camp, which is a lot.
Very much so, yeah. And 2 guys that aren't there yet. Oliver Shillington is dealing with a personal matter, and Andrew Mangiapane had some kind of a minor tweak and might just be out for a couple of days. So those guys have yet to report, but we'll be there soon.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Today on the show, we're going to talk about, we're going to do a quick recap on the Young Stars prospects games in Penticton. Talk about this roster that's just really crowded as we head into camp. Discuss the PTO signings and the re-signing of Richie. And there's some PTOs are going to make training camp really, really interesting. We'll cruise into some Flames news, touch on the Shillington, Tanev, Mangiapane news that came out today. We'll talk retro jerseys, the TV schedule for this year's Flames, and preseason games, which actually get underway this week. All right, let's recap this Young Stars tournament that they haven't played in for a while just because of COVID and other things. But we got to watch prospects on Friday and Saturday night and a little bit of Monday afternoon, and things didn't really go that well for the Flames, at least on the scoreboard. But I think, I don't know what, I wonder what you're trying to get out of that other than looking at players on an individual basis and how they worked. Flames lose to Vancouver 3-0, drop to Edmonton 4-1, and then on a Monday's performance, which is probably the best Flames performance, lose to the Winnipeg Jets 5-3. I watched a little bit. Kyle, did you watch any of the prospects at all?
I caught the highlights in all the games. I read the recaps on all the games. I didn't sit through any one outing start to finish, but yeah, I mean, sloppy at times, but I mean, you know, it's Young Stars tournament. I mean, you kind of got to expect that. Kind of read a little bit too about who had played well, who kind of didn't, the kind of the tweeners. The general consensus seemed to be the teams, you know, they got better as the tournament went along. But I think some of those guys, like Dustin Wolf, I know was a guy that stood out. I mean, anything that the losses he took were certainly not on him when I saw him all red. So, yeah, definitely not the results you would maybe just want to see, but also it's, you know, youngsters are trying to find their way.
You know, I'm not going to say I was worried about it, but I was a little bit disappointed, I guess, that we didn't have a little bit more offensive success.
Yeah, that's a fair word, I think.
And everything. And then I heard a couple of analysts talking, and they said that when Connor McDavid was at the prospects camp, he didn't stand out drastically. And I thought, you know, we got to put in, a little bit of ideas on time of year, how we're just getting going, and everything that goes around that. And I don't know, probably not something that we need to lose any sleep over in Calgary, but fun to get to see a few players like Dustin Wolf. I thought he looked really good. Connor Zary was probably the skater that stood out the most. And Adam Klapka, boy, that guy is huge. What is he, 6'7"?
Yeah, maybe even 6'8", now that you say that. A big, big kid anyway.
Yeah, just a horse out there. And interesting to see if he'll ever come of anything and be a factor on the big club. But he is one of the players that will also be taking part of the in the regular training camp, which kicks off tomorrow morning. But all in all, I mean, there's not a whole lot to take out of the tournament, I didn't think. Did you?
No, I mean, to be honest, I hadn't realized it had been, probably 3 years since we had that tournament. It is what it is. I mean, it's kind of a coat of primer for those kids who are going to, most of whom will be in main camp. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing too concerning. Nobody, like I said, nobody blew the doors off, and McDavid didn't. I mean, that kind of tells the whole story right there. So, it's entertaining. Nice to see hockey back. Good to see those normalcies of hockey returning. But certainly nothing that I would say, oh wow, this kid's going to be a stud, or oh wow, that guy was a bust. I mean, mostly for fun, I would say. The real test starts now.
It does, because this training camp's going to be outrageous. And but it was fun to get the Young Stars back onto the ice.
Yeah.
All right, as we roll into now, let's talk about a crowded roster. As I look at the training camp roster, and with all the PTO signings and everything that we've seen happen over the last couple of weeks, making this roster is going to be a hell of a challenge for any of the young players. And I mean, even some of the there may be some spots that veterans are going to have to work for. And, you know, let's start on the back end, and let's kind of break down a little bit of where we see camp going through and how we see roster spots being filled. On defense, I think we're pretty solidified, wouldn't you say, on who our top six are going to be?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question on that at all, especially knowing that Tanev reportedly is healthy and good to go for training camp. I don't see any surprises this year in terms of the top six.
I don't either. You know, but in hindsight, we probably would have said that last year too, and then Shillington kind of blew the doors off and walked right in and earned himself a spot. Now, I look at who we have on defense this year and the true, I call it NHL depth, and yep. I question how in the world anybody's going to move in on anybody other than maybe Oliver Shillington. I don't think I'm 100% confident no one's taken a Tanev, Uyghur, Anderson, or Hanifin spot. And Shillington, I think, albeit we're uncertain of when his return will be, I think his spot's pretty locked up as well as Zadorov's. Pretty solid in my mind, and
mine too, for sure. Like, I mean, Zadorov, you know, didn't get that contract to be a seventh defenseman, right?
No, for sure. And I think, you know, giving Stone the PTO, is that not like the perfect fit for your guy that is your seventh man?
Yeah, I'm still, and, you know, a few years ago I was not a Stone fan at all. Then kind of went into the closeted Stone fan phase, and now I'm kind of more vocal about it. I just couldn't believe he didn't get a league minimum deal. I felt he earned that with his play in the playoffs. I mean, granted, it's a new season, but I was really surprised that he had to settle for a PTO.
I did too. I thought he was going to get a year deal at least and just keep bridging him every year. But, you know, one of the things about Michael Stone that stands out to me is he's one of the few guys I've ever seen in my life who can sit out 10 to 15 games straight and walk back into the lineup like he didn't miss a game. And that is something that you just... that just doesn't come easy. I so many teams would give so much for that luxury of having that. That I don't know how he doesn't make this roster. I really don't. I mean, I look at all the defensemen, and I look at some of the guys, and I penciled a bunch out today, and I'm like, well, I just don't know. I mean, as much as I think Connor Mackey's probably earned a spot, I don't know how he fits in, and he can be sent back and forth to the AHL. I don't know how he doesn't end up falling back to that unless he really shocks us.
Well, and that you just said it. I mean, I think because of Stone's PTO and the other acquisitions, I mean, guys like Connor Mackey have to have the training camp of their lives to make this team. And that's not to say it wouldn't happen. Remember, it happened to TJ Brody years ago. You mentioned Shillington emerging last year. I mean, the opportunities are there, but it was a hell of a lot easier for him to become the seventh defenseman a couple of weeks ago than it is today.
Is there any chance that this is a year that Valimaki does what Shillington did last year?
I mean, there's a chance, but I think it's incredibly unlikely. I think he's going to be traded. I think we all know that at one point last season it was kind of mentioned that Sutter wasn't a huge fan of his, questioned his work ethic. Obviously he had a major injury as well that really hurt him on the depth chart a couple of years ago with his off-season training. So I'd be amazed if he's still with the team a month into the season. I think they're going to flip him for maybe a third round pick somewhere and try to give him a fresh start somewhere else. I just don't see how he fits to the plans at all at this point.
I don't either. I honestly don't, but I've thought that all summer and I kind of waited for a move to happen and it never did. So that makes me wonder, like, geez, I mean, is there something to this that I'm not seeing? I know that if he doesn't make our roster coming out of camp, he'll have to be put on waivers, and I have a hard time believing that he'll clear waivers. I don't know. I don't know where we go with this. I don't know what we get. I thought maybe a third round pick. I probably would agree with what you just said, but I don't know. Maybe it's falling to a fourth or fifth. I don't know. It's going to be a tough lineup for him to crack.
Extremely so. I mean, apart from the top six that, you know, we just talked about, you know, Stone being back in a PTO, I don't see how he wouldn't get signed unless he has a terrible camp. I mean, he's, like you said, you know, pretty much the best insurance policy you can have for a guy that can jump right in. Connor Mackey has shown that he's ready. Nick Melosh that they signed, I think he was in San Jose last year. He's had some NHL reps. There's just so many guys, you know, that are ahead of Valimaki at this point. Like, he's got to be eighth or ninth in the depth chart, and this guy was a first-round pick. I mean, that's a long way to climb your way back.
I had him ninth on mine, and when I charted it out, and I don't see a spot. I agree. I think there'll be a trade. I just don't know why maybe a trade hasn't happened already. But
the only thing I can figure there is that just because the summer's so odd that way, like, you know, Kadri signed so late with Calgary for, you know, probably a few different reasons, but I think a lot of teams wait for the market to settle, wait to get closer to camp to see what their needs are, to see what kind of shape guys are in. So if anything, I think there'd be more of a market now for him than maybe there was in the summer, but I still don't think as much of one. I mean, the guy, you know, no disrespect intended, hasn't really proven anything at this point.
No, you know, he hasn't. He just when I thought he was going to have a breakout year, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. The years kind of with COVID have kind of jumbled together. I can't remember if it was last year, but I had him pegged as being like kind of going to be the guy on the back end that's going to take the next step for the Flames. And, I just don't see it.
I always come back to that play. I think it was against Colorado in the 18-19 season where he made that huge hit at the blue line. Yep. And I think it was actually James Neal that scored in tight as a result of that hit. And that's kind of what we all hoped we'd see from him. But I think that injury, I believe, was it his Achilles, I think?
His Achilles was his last one, I believe.
Yeah, like that's a major, major injury. At the same time, like Michael Stone had a major knee surgery a few years ago, and he was able to still become something of an NHL regular. So I don't think Valimaki's on a road necessarily, but I do think he's on a road in Calgary. Like we've said, he's just fallen so far down that depth chart.
Let's shift gears on over to the offense, and there's a lot of spots there. And, you know, we can talk about the depth charts and who we see playing with who in the coming weeks as we prepare and learn a little bit more as training camp goes on. But I think we'd agree on, you know, the main guys down the middle probably being Lindholm, Kadri, Backlund, and Rooney. The guys that I'm interested to see where they fit is a PTO signing of Sonny Milano, a PTO signing of Cody Eakin. And are these guys legitimate shots of making this? And where's your take on them? And if so, who are they taking a spot from?
Well, Milano's a name that was thrown around all summer as a wishful thinking name for Flames Twitter. I mean, the guy's obviously got skill. You actually look up a few of his goals on YouTube. It's pretty evident that he's quite skilled. He would have hit probably 20-some goals had he played a full season last year. I think he had 14 and 65 or something like that. So yep. He, to me, I don't know how he didn't get a contract somewhere or why he didn't. Maybe is a better way to put it. So, to me, he slots in possibly on your second line. I'd be amazed if he didn't get a contract. As far as Cody Eakin goes, Cody Eakin is underlying numbers are not great, but I mean, he fits the intangible category that every team values and especially Daryl Sutter values. So, I mean, I'd put Milano ahead of Eakin just because he's so much more skilled, but I wouldn't be surprised if both those guys wound up with contracts.
You know, the Milano one, when I first heard it, I was like, oh man, this is good. And then I started thinking about it and I started thinking, well, how much would his contract be? Like, let's say he does have a good camp, let's say.
Yeah.
Other teams can still offer him contracts based off his performance on our PTO. So, does that price tag go up during camp? I wonder why he didn't get signed somewhere with a contract, other than the fact that there's very little teams that have cap space. That probably played a role.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I have him kind of slotting in next to Backlund and Dylan Dubé.
Yeah, I to answer that part of the question, yeah, I mean, I kind of see him possibly, like I said, second line or third line. He's not a fourth line guy. He's too skilled for that. But, you know, there's some mix of those top six forwards where he could kind of find his way in there. And I think actually it would be ahead of a guy like possibly Dylan Dubé, who's got a bit of offensive skill, but hasn't shown a great deal of it yet either. So his spot is going to be more interesting. Cody Eakin, we know already, is going to be battling with the Trevor Lewis's of the world on the fourth line, presumably.
Well, I think our fourth line's pretty wrapped up with Rooney centering Lewis and Lucic. And I thought Richie maybe subbing in for Lucic, you know. But that could be an Eakin. Obviously, his role would be a fourth line role, too. I'm kind of looking at him as like the Brad Richardson of last year. You know,
yeah, I kind of forget about him because, you know, where he was no longer with the team after he got claimed. But all those guys like that, I can't imagine a world where Lucic doesn't play regularly. As much as I personally don't think he should necessarily play regularly, I thought he should have been rested down the stretch last year, for example. But I think, well, Richie got a contract, which quite frankly surprised me. He would have been a PTO in my mind. But if Eakin gets a deal and you get Richie and Lewis, like, you know, those guys are basically playing musical chairs as far as I'm concerned.
Richie's deal was a one-year, $750,000, one-way deal. It was confirmed today, late today. I know Edmonton had talked about possibly signing him, and I wasn't really thrilled at the signing, but then I kept saying, you know, he's kind of the guy that could fit into that lineup along with Lucic to calm you know, Evander Kane in the Battle of Alberta a little bit, you know. I don't know. I'm not enamored with that signing, but I see the usefulness of him.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think one of the things we got to remember with a guy like Brett Ritchie, I think hockey fans have long memories, and we're all hanging on to how frustrating it was to watch him be constantly miscast in an offensive role. He has about as much offensive skill as I do. Okay, maybe not that little, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He has a role, but when you're miscast for so long, that creates a bias amongst the fan base where they just don't like the player, but it's not really the player's fault for a coach that kept trying to put a, you know, a square peg in a round hole kind of thing.
Yeah.
So if used properly, I would agree. I think he can be effective, but in terms of, I don't see any of those guys, you know, the three that I mentioned, Lewis, Richie, or Eakin, if Eakin makes a team, you know, playing an 82-game schedule. Because somebody's going to bump him on a maybe the second half of a back-to-back or whatever the case may be.
You know, a lot of talk in Calgary is fans wanting Jacob Pelletier to make this team. And
yeah, he was our captain here in Moncton, so I would count myself amongst those fans.
I'm not gonna discount it and say I don't want that, because obviously I want our prospects to do it.
Right.
But that being said, I want to see him come into camp and beat Sonny Milano out for that spot.
Oof, yeah.
Because well, I think
there's no better place to learn the game than alongside Michael Backlund. So if that's Milano's presumed spot or potential spot, then I think that's where you'd want to see a guy like Pelletier land. Pelletier is really, really good. And Tree Living said today in his comments about camp that, like, nobody's spot was guaranteed, whether you're 18 or 28, like, he didn't care. I think that's a little bit dishonest, because I think a lot of these guys are not gifted jobs, but pretty well guaranteed.
Yeah.
But given Pelletier's work ethic and his skill set, I would be pretty shocked if he didn't make the opening day roster. Maybe not be in the lineup, but I think he'll be on the roster.
I have a hard time believing, though, that if he's on the lineup, in the lineup, he's going to be on the roster. I have a hard time believing he's going to be a guy in the press box when you have Richie signed.
Yeah, I mean, well, it depends on a few different factors, obviously, right? I mean, and obviously guys that are waiver eligible versus those that aren't, but and now it could also be the case that the team is a little bit gun-shy with him because, you know, he only has one pro year under his belt, which he had a very good year, but it's still just 1 year. So maybe he becomes like a Christmas time call-up or something of that nature. But I know he's going to be one of the guys that'll be discussed at the end of camp, either because he made it or because he didn't and how damn good he was.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
You want to know, I'm going to bring up something that I've been thinking about all week. And I haven't really heard anybody else talking about this. But I've thought a lot about it after watching how last year progressed. And when I look at Pelletier on the training camp, him possibly being penciled in on that third line, and you hear the name Sonny Milano on a PTO, and all this keeps coming up, and now Adam Ruziska signs today, a 2-year deal, $700,000 plus. Crazy, stupid numbers. I don't understand how they do that. But his contract's different. It's a 1-year, two-way deal. It's a 2-year deal. Year one is a two-way, and year two is a one-way. I'm sorry, I probably said that like 5 times wrong. But, so you see him in the mix now, too. And I liked what he brought last year, and we'll talk about that in 1 minute. I'm getting ahead of myself. But Dylan Dubé is a guy, to me, that has some guys nipping at his heels for his spot.
Well, I think it's because he hasn't really carved out a spot. You know, he's bounced around a fair bit. He's been effective throughout most of the lineup, but the last guy to do that, in my mind, was Sam Bennett, and he got dealt, right? And went on to have pretty good success in Florida.
I think Sam Bennett showed me way more than Dylan Dubé did. And Sam Bennett struggled.
I don't disagree with that at all. I find the bouncing around kind of similar.
Yep.
But if you were, I guess, to look at it another way, if you were to ask me what player in the Flames roster do you consider somewhat valuable but certainly expendable, it's probably is Dylan Dubé.
I don't know. I think, you know, you He's got to really show me something in camp. And I'm not saying I don't want him on the roster. I'm just saying that when I see names like Sonny Milano and I see Adam Ruziska, who I thought last year, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but like I thought he progressed pretty damn well last year.
Played a great year. He just, you know, again, a younger player trying to learn the defensive side of the game a little bit more, but had 10 points in, I believe, maybe 30 games thereabouts. It was really effective. The one thing I will say about Dubé, though, that I think it's a little bit overlooked is he actually was much better in the second half. Like his scoring went up quite a lot. Like his points per game was much better the second half of the season. So maybe he has a breakout year and, you know, we've got egg on our face, but I do think that with guys like, oh, it may be nothing better, right? But I think guys like Ruziska showed enough. I think, Pelche could play a very similar role. But point is, you know, the point of this whole discussion is there's a lot of bodies in that camp and they ain't all going to make it.
It's crazy. I mean, and, you know, they were talking about today on 960 about how, you know, it's a lot of spots, you know, or a lot of players to fill very few spots. But, you know, that's what happens when you have a good hockey team, right? If we could pencil all this out and then say, oh, I hope he makes it and I hope he makes it, that means we're not very good.
That's basically what Tree Living said today, too. And you know, if you don't have a lot of competition in camp, you're probably not a very good hockey team.
Yeah. You know, if you look at this and you're like, and we consider it and look at it and go, oh, I don't know how the hell all these, you know, how is he going to make this team? How is he going to make this team? That means we're good.
Yeah. Yeah, at least on paper. I mean, we've got a very good training camp roster. And the other thing, too, that kind of doesn't get talked about a lot, but I mean, Daryl Sutter mentioned this before. I mean, when he inherited that team, and now this is Daryl Sutter talking, so take with a grain of salt, but he said they were in terrible, terrible condition.
Yeah, did that surprise you?
Not really, because we saw it a lot of nights if you watched them play. Like, they had no pace at all. They were chasing the puck constantly. Their power play was lethargic. Like, everything about them was infuriating, because you knew they weren't as bad as they were playing, but you couldn't necessarily figure out why just from the eye test. Other than to say certain systems didn't work, but I mean, you know, looking back on it, they were not a good conditioned or well conditioned team at all.
It's the Jeff Ward thing, man. I hated so many things about this when he was coaching that to hear that they weren't conditioned good, I was just like, yeah, that's just one more thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a serious problem. So, but that's going to be a telltale sign too with this training camp. If any of these newer guys, if any of these PTOs are not in great shape or not committed to getting in great shape, Daryl Sutter's not going to have any time for them. So that alone, you know, could play a huge factor in terms of who sticks around and who doesn't.
Roster news today. We touched on it early on in the introduction, but Oliver Shillington left camp and to deal with some personal issues. Now, Treliving was strong about saying it had nothing to do with substance or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So all that's good.
Which I appreciated. I mean, I think it was important to, you know, to cut off any innuendo or rumor right off the hop. So good on him for doing that.
And we have no idea what's going on, but we wish Oliver the best. And I can't wait to have him back into camp because I was really impressed with what we saw with him last year, and hopefully he can carry that into this year. Andrew Mangiapane, we touched on it earlier, too, out a few days, tweaked something during summer training. That's never a good sign, but not something that I guess I'm going to lose sleep over tonight. But
He's skating on his own with the conditioning coach right now, so it's not like he's off the ice. And Treliving downplayed it a lot, and it sounds like, I don't know how much he skated in the summer. I think pretty regularly, if I'm not mistaken, but I mean, if you've ever played hockey, tweaks happen, right? So I would think he'd be back within a few days, hopefully, anyway.
Chris Tanev will participate fully in training camp, but is not expected to play any games in the preseason, is what Brad Treliving stated today, as he is recovering from an off-season surgery that had a timeline of 4 to 6 months, and he's currently sitting at that four-month mark. So, be great to have him back. Can't wait to have him back. But I want him back 100%. You know?
Yeah, I'm a little leery, too, the team is very reliant on him last year. Now with Mackenzie Weegar in the fold, I'm a big fan, at least at the outset of the season, of having Tanev and that third pairing with Sidorov kind of take Gudbranson's place. I just don't want to see him start logging heavy minutes right after a surgery like that. I mean, I know nothing about it other than, you know, the type of surgery he had and the suggested recovery time. But, yeah, I don't know. I think they want to be careful with how they manage his minutes.
I went back and forth on this a lot. And you hear so many people say, well, Tanev and Uyghur need to be top line because they're the top defense and they're going to log all these minutes. And I'm like, you know, defensemen that log that many minutes are always defensemen on crappy teams. When you have depth.
Yeah, I get it.
When you have depth like this, wouldn't it be great if we could have all our guys at like 20 minutes? I mean, wouldn't that be ideal? I mean, it'll save on their bodies as we go. And I played around with the lines and my original thought was, you know, you keep Anderson and Hanifin together and you keep Tanev and Chillington together and you keep, you know, you put, you know, Uyghur with Zadorov and see what happens. But then I've also played with the idea of maybe Uyghur and Anderson would fit and then Hanifin and Tanev would be a good fit just because sometimes Hanifin needs that extra defensive crutch. And then I thought Zadorov Shillington, but then I kind of cringed a little bit when I read that to myself. So I
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. And I guess training camp is where we're going to figure that out. And
well, if you want a really good puck moving pair too, I mean, if Uyghur was to play his natural side as a right shot, which he doesn't typically from what I understand, but Uyghur Hanifin would be a great puck moving duo.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
That, to your point, there's so many permutations with these six defensemen that I really couldn't tell you what it's going to look like.
You know, I think last year we got, if you look at this core or the defense core last year, and they really stayed in their pairs a lot of the year. And that's not something you saw around the league that much. And we got used to that and we like that because previous coaches had blenders out every night. So we liked that last year. We liked that security blanket. But now with so many moving parts with players in and out, it's really going to be nice this preseason to see how people fit and how people gel together to create these new lines that hopefully click, we have success, and we don't see a lot of blunders this year.
Well, that was, like you said, that's what worked so well last year. The guys get used to who they were playing with, and I remember a few kind of in-game tweaks when necessary, but you know, Sutter stuck to his guns pretty well all season long. There was never any major surprises or any big changes. Hell, it worked.
It did, and let's hopefully it goes again this year. Let's switch gears a little bit now and roll into some Flames news. Well, the Flames have named a new ECHL affiliate, the Rapid City Rush, who were the Flames affiliate a few years back, are again the affiliate this year, and Stockton, we've talked about this numerous times in the show, is now the Calgary Wranglers, and that's going to be interesting, and a little bit of a weird dynamic having the AHL team right in Calgary, and will probably make some of the roster shifting a whole lot easier.
Oh, unbelievably easier. I mean, California is not a long flight from Alberta, but man, the same city. I mean, the access to the players. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons to do it. I think it's going to be great for the team. I mean, you see a lot of teams going that route. They're trying to get their, I mean, you remember years ago, I mean, Calgary had their affiliate nearby St. John, right? Close to me, right? I mean, that's a fair jog if you get to recall a player quick or send him on a rehab stint. You know, St. John's, Newfoundland had Toronto's farm team for years, or even Winnipeg's. I mean, it's just most teams, I think, in a perfect world have that AHL team either, you know, in the same city or a quick bus ride away.
It's going to change things a lot this year, I think, and I think it's going to be good. And they were talking today, one of the radio stations, about how the teams that have that, like San Jose, I know, does, and Winnipeg does, how it's so much easier for the players because they have to worry about one residence, whether they're up or down with the big club. So that'll be a big help.
Even Buffalo and Rochester are very close, right?
Yeah. Got to get your opinion on this. It's coming out October 20th. The Reverse Retro 2.0 will be out for jerseys. And it sounds like Blasty's coming back. Are you a Blasty fan, Kyle, or are you not?
I am. It was kind of at one of the high points of my fandom as a kid that, or as a teenager, I guess, that the Blasty came out. I like it right now because I think it's a good mix of the old and the new. The home and away jerseys are the nicest ones in the league. Yes. And you can't, that's why I have one behind me. They're basically untouchable. But Blasty really appeals to the younger fan base. There's a few guys on Twitter that go nuts for it. So I think it's cool to have it around. I think it's a little ridiculous that we just had one 2 years ago that looks great. And now we have a very, very, very similar version, apparently, coming out. So, you know, I'm not going to give any marks for creativity, but I don't mind having Blasty around. What about you, Brad? What do you think of Blasty?
I've never been a big fan. And
for some reason, I feel like I knew that, but I don't think we've actually discussed it.
You know why? And it's not that I hate it. There's a couple reasons why I don't like it. Black, when it first came out, was back during when every team decided that they had to have a black jersey, and I thought that was stupid, even though black's one of my favorite colors. I thought that was dumb. Like, it's either your color or it's not. You know, why is the San Jose Sharks black now? You know, and it didn't make sense to me. But the horse head, not a huge fan. I get it. It's not the worst thing we could do, but I'm not a fan. I'll tell you what, I'll become a fan, Kyle, if we win with him this year. How's that?
Yeah, that's fair. One of the things with Blasty is the people associate with, like, the dark days of the team, which is fair from 98 when it, it was 98 when it first came around.
Yep.
But people always forget it was worn during the 2004 Cup run. It was worn it wasn't worn during the playoffs, but it was worn during that season, 03-04, okay?
It was, huh?
And it was worn in 05-06 when they won the Northwest Division. I mean, when they face-spun against Anaheim that year. But, like, that jersey is just as much a part of fairly successful seasons as it was terrible seasons. So to associate it with a certain era doesn't make too much sense to me in terms of winning and losing. But, I'm a fan. I'll leave it at that.
Golf tournament. Last week, the Flames had their annual charity golf tournament, raised $260,000. And the only reason I bring this up, number one, it's great. It's great for the community of Calgary. And it also, and the reason I bring this up is, and I'm not trying to throw stones at anybody, but I hope that the city sees this, and I hope that the members of the community of Calgary see this when we're determining a new arena. The amount that this team does for the community is enormous, and I hope that gets the credit it deserves, I guess. But Sportsnet this year, games are going to be on. There's going to be 22 national, 60 regional on Sportsnet. Rick Ball and Kelly Rudy on the call. Ryan Leslie hosting. I like that group. I like that group of guys. I think I'm glad there's not changes with that. I'm glad there's not changes with that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I think one of the most disappointing parts from the playoffs, apart from the result, was switching during the Edmonton-Calgary series, was losing Rick Ball in particular. Rick Ball's call on the Mangiapane goal in Game 5 against Dallas was phenomenal. One of the best goal calls of the years of, like, not even just a Flames fan. Anybody who heard it, give you chills. Like, I find he's really underrated. Really, really underrated.
And I love Kelly Rudy. I've always been a Kelly Rudy fan, and he's just got great input. And I know he gets ripped a lot on Twitter. I don't know why, but I'm a Kelly Rudy fan.
Yeah, they're jealous of his hair. I don't know. Kelly Rudy is fantastic. He's got some really good insight. He always has keeps him kind of humorous too, mm-hmm. which, you know, can kind of break away from how mundane the Tuesday night hockey game in Buffalo can be, so to speak, between, like, the Flames and Sabres. Not to pick on the Sabres, but interconference games, I mean.
But I also feel like Kelly Rudy brings so much history to it. And he seems like he's in tune with the players now real well and can relate the history of back when he played to how it is now. And I just think it's really entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also pay a little bit of attention to the U.S. television market. And one of the things interesting that I found this week was TNT and ESPN and ABC announced their national broadcasts. And Calgary has 4 national broadcasts in the U.S., which is, I believe, 3 more than last year. So they're moving up in the U.S.
Yeah, big time.
Some of the teams that are, I'm just going to throw out some of the teams that are really interesting. Montreal has 0. No games. Which does not surprise me because not a great team to watch right now. Winnipeg 1, Ottawa 1, Vancouver 2. Some of the teams that have a lot that surprised me. Anaheim has 14. That's a lot. Chicago has 14. Detroit has 14. Minnesota and Pittsburgh have 15. The Rangers have 15. No surprise there.
Yeah.
But to see some of those up there in the Chicago, like, oof. I know it's a big market, though, and I'm sure that's what they're playing off of.
Original six, yeah.
Stanley Cup champs, the Colorado Avalanche have 14. So that is interesting. But Montreal with 0, Calgary gets 4, so hey, we're moving up in the U.S.
I wonder if that has to do with Calgary's amount of American players. So if Milano makes a team, he's another one, but you get, you know, Hanifin, Toffoli, obviously Gaudreau and Kachuk and along with the team, but they always seem to have a fair amount of American players, Trevor Lewis as well, fair amount of American-born players, so I don't know if they consider that or not, but it's interesting.
I would bet they don't. I'd bet they don't.
Unless it was a superstar, which, yeah.
You know, I think the reason Edmonton has 14, that's Connor McDavid.
Oh, 100%, you know, yeah.
Toronto has 11. That's Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
I just think that, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I'm gonna do a little more research on it. I want to find out the four teams that Calgary are playing, and I bet it's, you know, when they're in New York, or it could be the Florida Calgary game, to be honest with you. I could see that being a national broadcast game. And
I don't think there's been a trade for a little while that's touched the magnitude of that one, so that would make sense from a marketing standpoint.
You know, it'll be interesting. I'll dive a little deeper into that and figure that one out.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
Time to do the game preview section of the show, and not a lot to preview. You know, during the regular season, we'll talk a little bit more in-depth about what lies ahead for the next week, but not a whole lot this week. We do get the camp opening tomorrow on ice, but we hit the ice the 25th, I believe that's Sunday night, for a split squad matchup with the Vancouver Canucks. Two games that day, one in Calgary, one in Vancouver, and then two nights later, Seattle. And then next Wednesday night, the night we record our next episode, will be the Edmonton Oilers, and we roll through 8 games in the preseason. It'll be interesting, I think. This will be one of the more interesting. I'll be in tune to these games just to see how this roster shakes out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as we talked about at the outset, I mean, I think this is a really, really competitive camp. Calgary's always put together pretty decent training camps, but, I mean, this is as deep one as I can remember anyway. I think especially after we get through, like, say, the second round of cuts, when things get a little bit tighter, it's going to be really fascinating. And I think there's going to be some guys who are really surprised during those games, so they're definitely worth watching.
Sunday night's Vancouver games, I would guess, probably not going to feature a lot of the regular players. With 61 being in camp, I'm sure we'll see a couple here and there. But then I'm sure cuts will start happening right after those first two games, and players will start getting moved out, and that'll change a little bit. So that'll be interesting to see. The regular season gets going October 13th, a Thursday night. At home when the Colorado Avalanche, the defending Stanley Cup champs, come to town. Nothing like starting off that way, and then it doesn't get much easier. Two nights later, Battle of Alberta in Edmonton, Hockey Night in Canada on a Saturday night. And wow, those are two matchups to get your feet right into the fire to start the season.
Well, there's two reasons to be excited there, and they're both, for me, two of the main reasons, I guess, are both involved Nazem Kadri. So Kadri against his former team that he just won the cup with.
Yeah.
And then Kadri against McDavid, but more so if you talk to fans of the two teams, Kadri versus Kane. So he is going to make this team even more fun to watch, I think.
He's going to add that factor that Kachuk added maybe to a different level. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, I think that's fair. I'm trying to define it myself. I mean, Tkachuk was really good at getting under, is really good at getting under opponent's skin, but I couldn't stand Kadri, probably because he didn't play for the Flames.
I know, me too. I hated him, but that's good. That's a sign of a good player.
When Brad Marchand, another great example, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. He's one of those guys that I think could really push the team over the top, because all of things being equal, I mean, obviously Mackenzie Weegar is a big upgrade in defense. Jonathan Huberdeau's skill level, point totals, very comparable. In fact, the same as Johnny Gaudreau. So, a lot of lateral movement in some regards. Not to suggest any one player is better than the other, but very similar players. But yeah, Kadri's definitely an X factor. And those first two games that you alluded to, I mean, that's going to be really, really interesting to see how they stack up against those two.
Yeah, it's nothing like getting two difficult ones right out of the chute right away. Well, we're back again next week on a Wednesday night. We record Wednesdays. We'll release on Thursdays. Unless the Flames play on a Wednesday night, then we shuffle the schedule a little bit as the season goes on. Sure, nice to have Kyle Lewis as part of the team this year. And, make sure you get on Twitter. Follow him at VanLewis14. And follow me at Brad Brood. And make sure you follow Flames Unfiltered at Flame Unfiltered. Check us out at flamesunfiltered.com. Rate, review, subscribe, all those good things. Good to be back. Good to have hockey back. Super excited for this season. Can't wait to see how it gets going. And, preseason starts this week. And we're back next week for another episode of Flames Unfiltered.
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. And also make sure you check out our Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Check out host Brad Brood on Twitter at Brad Brood
and co-host Kyle Lewis on Twitter at VanLewis14.
If you like what you hear, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find Flames Unfiltered on all the major podcast players. Thanks again and enjoy the hockey action.
Play on! Yeah!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.